Welcome to Recovery Rocks, where we talk about all things recovery and music. I'm Tawny.
And I'm Lisa, and we're really glad you're here.
Hello, hello, everybody. How's it going? It's your two favorite ladies, bi-coastal ladies, San Diego and New York.
Hi, everybody.
today we're going to chat about medication and taking medication to improve your mental health. We are in no way doctors or mental health professionals in any way. So this is not advice. This is our stories with medication. Right. So just to get that out there. Lisa and I have many things in common, but another thing now is Lexapro.
Yes.
And you also take Wellbutrin, I believe.
I do. Yeah, that has been, so what happened with me was when I went into the hospital for detox in 2004, they put me on Lexapro right away in the detox. And I had no idea why or if I needed it or anything, but they said it would help. And I felt like, you know, death warmed over in the detox. And I said, I'll take it. Give it whatever you got. I'll take it. And I also felt like there was this sort of kind of Keith Richards taking your meds kind of vibe to lining up at the meds window in the hospital, in the psych unit. And so I got diagnosed while I was in detox. You know, I talked to the psychiatrist to come in each day. I was there for 5 days. And at the end, you know, I had like long talks with him about why did I drink, you know, what motivated me, why did I take drugs, like what the, all the things kind of, you know, my history with it and everything. And at the end of the detox, when I was going home, he said, you know, I believe based on our conversations that, you have, and I knew I had a genetic predisposition in my family, because my grandfather died from this disease. And he said, I believe you have that combined with an underlying, undiagnosed, untreated mental health disorder. I believe you have, he diagnosed me with major depressive disorder and anxiety. And he said, you've crossed a line where you can never drink safely again. You can't, you know, you've probably been self-medicating these underlying disorders since you were a kid and were, because the first substance I abused was food. And I would shove chocolate, like not knowing that, you know, it was the dopamine hit that I was really getting into from the sugar. And he said, and you've probably been, you know, your alcohol and drug use all along has been your self-medicating these things. And it was a definite fit. I mean, I'm really consolidating what the discussion, but he said, you know, you can't drink safely, so you need to launch on a program of recovery. But I think you also need to treat this disorder, which is a chemical disorder in your brain, just like heart disease or cardiac disease is a disorder in your heart, or, you know, diabetes is in your kidneys. You have a chemical imbalance in your brain that leads you to struggle with depression and anxiety. And I'm prescribing you medication to address that. And I said, great, sign me up. And I did that for the first year and a half of recovery, and it was going really good. But I, because I went on it, and this I'm going to be interested in your take, obviously, because I went on it right out of the gate, I didn't know when I was a year and a half sober and feeling really good, I was like, is it the medication or is it being sober? You know, I couldn't separate the two. And so I tried going off and I did like a very careful tapered off or tapering down with my therapist of the medication and ultimate, and then went off entirely. And I felt good. I felt good through the whole step down. And then I felt good for like 2 weeks afterwards. And then in the third week, it was like, bam, just like the curtains dropped. And it was like a black film over my eyes all of a sudden. Like it just was like, you know, I was just got so dark so quick. And I was on a trip with my my now husband, who I had only recently met. We were in Florida and I had a work thing. And, you know, I was trying to like power through this struggle while talking to my therapist. And she was like, you shouldn't be feeling bad. This shouldn't be happening. And I had to go meet, I remember I had to go meet my, one of my new bosses at the hotel we were at for this conference downstairs. And I couldn't get out of bed. And I remember literally rolling to the floor of the hotel room, like a year and a half sober, rolling onto the floor of the hotel room from the bed and calling my therapist and saying, I have 4 days left before I drink. I said, I don't know why it's 4 days, but I can live like this for 4 more days. And she was like, okay, you're coming home tomorrow and you're going to go to the, and I was planning on coming home the next day. It was scheduled. It wasn't like I cut the trip short. It was just convenient. That, and she was like, experiment's over. You're, you know, you tried it, it doesn't work. You now know that you, you know, that you need to be taking this to keep your, you know, mental health disorder in check and to give you a chance to do the other things that will contribute to you being happy and healthy. And so I just, when I went back and got back on, I said, that's it. You know, I've done the experiment. I don't care to do it again. So ever since I've been on the Lexapro, and then, you know, you get to a point where it can stop being as effective. And for me, it was about, I think it was about 7 years in, maybe 6 or 7 years in, it really stopped being as effective. And that was when my, psychiatrist added in the Wellbutrin, which acts as sort of a amplifier, I think, when it has stopped working. So we've dealt with the dosages over time, but I still, you know, it's been almost 17 years and I still take Lexapro and Wellbutrin. I was incredibly fortunate to get a correct mental health diagnosis and to get medication that actually addressed it right out of the gate, which is really, really hard and really, really unusual. So for all, like, you know, the hospital, the psych hospital I checked myself into for detox when I didn't know what I was doing, it was like the worst in Manhattan. It was terrible, but I give them all credit because they got the diagnosis right. And that was what really mattered at the end of the day.
That is because, I mean, you and I both know people that have been misdiagnosed or, you know, even before misdiagnosed have been, it's hell to find a therapist that you trust or a psychiatrist, yes. You know, so it's like before you could even be misdiagnosed, you're going through this.
You don't even get
this.
The chance to be misdiagnosed.
Yeah, like you're courting these therapists and psychiatrists and doctors, and it's an exhausting process. So, you know, I had a similar situation where, you know, just finding the right therapist, I lucked out because it was the first one that I met with. She and I just clicked.
Yeah.
And I've been with her for 4.5 years now, and I can't imagine not having her. And, you know, I waited about I got on Lexapro in October, right before celebrating 5 years of sobriety. So it took me pretty much 5 years.
Yeah.
Where, you know, I guess I had like an emotional rock bottom moment. It was actually emotional and physical rock bottom moment where
in recovery.
In my recovery. Yeah. So, you know, early in 2020, before the world exploded, you know, I was having some family issues and I wasn't dealing with it. And, I was having a really tight chest. It felt like something was sitting on my chest. I was having trouble breathing. And I just kind of got used to it, which, you know, we do, we'd get used to this horrible treat, like how we treat ourselves. And I went to my doctor and I had blood work done. She checked my oxygen levels. I had an EKG. I was convinced that there was something wrong with my lungs, with my chest. And she, as soon as she said, I think you're having like a low grade panic attack and it's been going on for weeks. Instantly, it's like this feeling left my chest because I knew what it was, you know, like,
yes.
I started crying and, it was this very, you know, very emotional moment of, I was like, you know, I'm a sobriety advocate. I have a mental health podcast. Like, I should have seen this coming. and I didn't. So, you know, this is proof that, you know, recovery is an ongoing journey.
Yes.
And it is nonlinear. And just because we are advocates about this stuff, we are still learning as we go.
Yeah. And I love what you said about how the instant relief, because it reminds me of like when, you know, a lot of times people think like, oh, you know, I don't want to have something wrong with me like that or something, whatever.
Yeah.
And when I remember when the doctor said to me, I think this is why you've been, you know, abusing substances almost your entire life. And here's what we can do to address it in your brain. I was like, thank you. I felt such relief. Like, you can put a name on it. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Like, there is something that I can do. Like, it was, you know, if somebody had asked me when I was, you know, towards the end or any time through, are you depressed? I'd be like, yeah, I'm depressed. Everybody's depressed. And then when he was like, no, you have a chemical imbalance. There is something going on in your brain and how it's processing it. And, you know, this is what it is. This is why you feel the way you do. And it was just such a relief. And also, like, I really love what you said about, you know, there were circumstances in your life that you might have had this sort of underlying thing at a much lower level, but that exacerbated it and brought it to the surface. And that at that point, you know, you don't have to know what it is or go, you know, have an answer to everything right away. And sometimes it can appear later, like what you're experiencing.
And that's exactly what it was. And, you know, that rock bottom moment, that was in like January of 2020. I still waited 10 months to actually get on medication. I didn't have any issues with being on medication. It was just like, I have this mentality of, I want to go the holistic route.
Oh, and talk about that a little. Cause I always am like, I go right to chemicals.
Well,
I'm like,
I wish,
know,
I did sooner.
Better living
but,
through chemistry. That's me.
Well, and I'm definitely on that train now, but it took me a while. And I think I was apprehensive because of I had an issue with pills in high school. And so I was apprehensive to take a pill.
Yeah,
and
that makes sense.
So I think that was why I was more on the holistic, of the holistic mindset. So keep in mind, I was 4 years sober at this point, which meant, you know, 3 years in therapy and support groups and blogging and podcasting and, you know, very in touch with my mental health. And 10 months later, you know, it's October, I'm about to be 5 years sober. And I have another rock bottom moment of just external life happens. And I didn't know how to deal with it. My chest was tight. I couldn't breathe. I was anxious. I was lashing out at my boyfriend, just like, you know, this almost walking on eggshells. Like he didn't want to set me off because I was so anxious. Like my anxiety was crippling me. You know, I went back to my doctor and I was like, I think I need to get on medication. And she said, okay, talk to your therapist about it. If she's okay with it, give me a call and we'll get you a prescription. So I did, called my therapist and, then I got started on 20 milligrams of Lexapro and, I think it's important to note that as someone who tried the holistic route for almost for 5 years, I'm glad that I tried the holistic way, but I do wish that I would have gotten on medication sooner, but whatever. I'm not beating myself up over that, but like,
regret is a wasted emotion.
It is totally, it's wasted. But I was of the mindset of, I've literally done everything I can to treat this on my own. Like, I was like, I'm sober. I go to therapy. I do yoga. I meditate. I journal. I was like, I've done every possible non-chemical thing that I can do. And I still, my anxiety still consumes me.
Yeah.
So I was desperate. Like I needed something else. And it's been almost 4 months now that I've been on Lexapro every day, and it has changed my life. I mean, it really has. And you put it perfectly where it's like, it doesn't, you know, it's not going to fix you, but it's going to turn your boil to a simmer.
Right.
And that is the perfect way to describe it, where my doctor said, you're just going to care a little bit less. And that's exactly it. That's it. You know, some things just kind of roll off my shoulder now, or I'm like, what are you going to do?
Right. Like, I feel like it's like, yeah, there's like that tweak in your chemical balance in your brain where it's like for me, it was like I was approaching everything askew, right? Like like if you think of like, you know, the chemical balance being like you're like a cord in a socket, right? Like I was just not in that. I was not able to stick that plug into the socket to deal with things. And then it just like the medication just took my cord down to where it fit in the socket. And now I could see things a little more clearly. You know, I wasn't so it gave me like a little bit of distance from my fear in a way and my anxiety, but it also, you know, I've never felt like anything other than myself on it. I think a lot of people worry they're not going to feel like themselves. They're not going to, it's somehow going to be like a mind, some sort of mind altering substance. Like, did you notice any, talk about like your ramp up and how long did it take to kick in and what did you notice or not notice or?
Yeah, I was definitely, you know, anxious about the irony is I was anxious about it. I had it in my head that it was going to make me a different person, right, which is why I waited. One of many reasons why I didn't get on it sooner. I didn't want to be different. I still wanted to be me. But you know, the side effects were, you know, I had some initial side effects of, you know, upset stomach. My heart was racing at first, but, that went away pretty quickly. And, you know, just takes your body a little bit of time to adjust to a new chemical every day. But you know, once that subsided, it, you know, everything really did get better. I still have anxiety, but I do know how it's just another tool that's in my toolbox at this point where it's helping me live one day at a time. It's helping me process external things that I can't control, which is pretty much everything. You know, I can only control myself, and it's, you know, taking this medication's helping me be okay with that. And instead of trying to control everything and everyone and every situation, I now see it more as I'm more cognizant of my energy and how I want to spend it.
Right.
And I don't want to spend it trying to change something that I can't change. So like, maybe it's helped me accept reality. It's helped me accept the things I cannot change.
Right.
You know, the courage to I'm butchering the Serenity Prayer in my head. It's hard to say it without saying the whole thing. you know?
The surrender. Oh, yeah. Okay. So
the wisdom to know the difference. So,
yeah, right. Right. That's the end.
I think it's given me that wisdom to know the difference.
And do you think you'll do the experiment I did at some point and say, okay, maybe I was going through this period where there was a lot going on with the family and this and that, and it got me through, and now I want to try and go back off? Or you're just going to approach that, take it like, again, one day at a time. And if you feel that way in the future, you're open to it.
I mean, who knows? I think I'm less likely to, right now I feel less likely to do something like that because I did spend 5 years away from it. So I know,
when you went on it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's cool that we, you know, again, we have these different experiences, but they're still so similar.
Yeah.
Where, you know, there's no right time to get on medication. There's no right time to get sober. You just kind of, it's deeply personal and whatever works for you. And if you have, you know, a trusted mental health professional that you can talk to about it, like, we're lucky that we had that.
Yeah. I mean, I always say, like, when I get asked about it, like, why suffer? Why suffer if this can help, you know? And that's, we always are referred to that Saturday Night Live episode where I think it was in like, it must have been in 2016 when Kanye West was on and did sort of a rant at the end after having been the guest host about Trump. And then the response the following week on Weekend Update from Pete Davidson was just like my favorite thing. And, you know, he basically talks about the importance of, if you need medication, of taking medication. And his thing was like, you know, there's no shame in the medication game. And it's true. It's just, you know, if you had cardiac disease, you'd take blood pressure medication. If you had diabetes, you'd take kidney medication, you know, or you take insulin, you take whatever you need to take as prescribed. And your brain is just another organ in your body, like your kidney, like your heart. And it needs to be treated as such. You know, this is why mental health and physical health issues are, you know, they need to not be thought of as so separate, because if you come in with the notion that, you know, understanding that as the U.S. Surgeon General has said, and, you know, that the, you know, these are disorders of the brain the same way that there are physical disorders of other, or there are disorders of other organs, you know, we treat it the same. And if something doesn't work, we try something else.
You're right. And I'm glad you brought that up about the, like, if you do need medication for something physical, like, you wouldn't hesitate to take it.
No.
And I mean, I would even argue that, you know, mental health is your physical health.
It is.
Because it may be invisible, but, you know, so is diabetes. So is heart disease. You can't physically see it, but you do see the side effects of it. Yeah. And just the same way that you do with anxiety or depression. I mean, when I am anxious, I feel it physically.
Yeah.
So that is a physical.
Oh, totally. Thing. It is absolutely physically manifested. Yeah. And, you know, I think that there's a, whatever the reluctance is towards that, I mean, it all plays in the same way. Like, if you're not taking care of your mental health the same way you would take care of any other health, other things, other physical aspects of your well-being are going to be impacted. You know, for me, you know, I was doing incredible physical damage to my body, my liver, my heart, my everything, my stomach. Like, there was nothing that wasn't affected because I wasn't addressing my brain issue. And so that can change.
Well, and like you said, when you went off of it, you were 4 days away from relapsing. You knew
when it hit.
You knew that.
I don't know why.
And that's physical. Like, your mental health is so connected. You would have drank again, which would have been a physical reaction to your mental health and not taking care of it. So it's
totally,
it is essential. And like, you know, even when it comes to like taking a mental health day at work, you, like that is essential too. If you had a broken leg and you couldn't walk, you know, there would be no question. You couldn't, like you most likely couldn't go into the office. But like, if you're having a bad mental health day, why would you try and stick it out? Why would you try and, you know, force yourself into this situation that could make it worse? It's just as important.
And that's a lot of what I talk about when I speak at law firms and law schools is the, is that exact thing of like, we're trying to do with this whole kind of movement in the legal profession that, I'm part of, is getting through the idea that, you know, if you have to take a mental health leave because you're struggling with anxiety, depression, whatever it is, that is something that you can approach with your employer. It is just, I need a medical leave. You don't have to give details. Like there's this idea because there is, you know, what people worry about stigma and things like that. And a lot has changed, but, you know, a lot hasn't. And, you know, the answer is I have a medical issue I'm struggling with and or I'm dealing with and I need to take a leave and, you know, whatever it is from your doctor or whatever. And that's it. It doesn't have to be some public thing.
Well, but, even okay. like to use a sick to, oh, sorry. Are we, okay. No, one ahead. More thing. Even to use a sick day, you don't have to tell your boss why, like, isn't that right?
Well
like you can just say, I'm not coming in. I'm not feeling well. You don't have to even go into it.
Right. No, never. Never. And they are really restricted in what they can ask you anyway. But I can tell you after many years of being the boss that people called into, I'd rather not know. You don't need to detail your flu to me. You don't need to detail, you know, your food poisoning, whatever it is, your mental health. If you're not feeling well and you're taking a day off, that's all I need to know. You know, we feel like, especially as women, I think we feel this explanation of why I'm not like toughing it out, showing up in the office. The answer is I'm not well today. That's it. There is no prize for toughing it out. Nobody gets a medal. You know, this idea, again, going back to my view is like, why suffer? You need a mental health day. It's just not your day. Do it. So no, I was going to ask you just in closing up
and
about
it's very obvious if you
go ahead.
I was going to say it's very obvious if you do go in and you're struggling like and
it's
you
forced.
Should have stayed home. It's very obvious to your coworkers if something is wrong, you know, like and it's like you said, there's no goal and like
no.
Well, yeah, I'm thinking about, you know, killing myself, but I'm going to go in anyway. Like there's no reward for that.
No.
Like you need to just relax and go home and take a bath and just, and like you have to do those things. But what were you going to ask?
Well, first I was going to say in response to what that I went in when I was in that period, remember I said I felt good for three weeks and then the curtains came down when I was off the antidepressants. And I went into the office. I was still going into the office and all I could do, I couldn't take any personal calls because I just couldn't handle that. I could just go in. I would shut my door immediately, which I never usually do. And I would just be whatever I had to get through, I would get through and I would go. And I was like, that's good. That's okay. And then I was behind closed doors. And with my depression, sometimes I just start like weeping. Like I don't know where it comes from or whatever, but I start and I was crying sitting at my desk just by myself. And I had a boss who, he would knock on your door, but he would simultaneously open it. And so while I'm sitting at my desk thinking I'm pulling this thing off or whatever, for what, God knows what reason, he knocks, opens the door and just sees me like a puddle behind my desk. And he just looks at me and he like holds his hand up and he was like, I'm sorry to bother you. Nothing important. I'll talk to you later. And shut the door and walked out.
And like on the broken leg note, if imagine someone going into like, you know, working retail, they're going in trying to like walk. How like that would be ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like it would be completely ridiculous. And you like you're loved, like your coworkers care about you. They don't want you there if you're physically or in any way
right,
unable to work. So and just think about that. Like if you right. are on the verge of tears or, you know, you're dealing with something, it is actually ridiculous that you're trying to pretend everything's okay.
Right. And like there is that we feel this need to never, you know, I don't know, like that they would care. Like I realized the moment that he just walked out of my office and said, you know what, it's nothing. Just take care of yourself. Shut the door. I was like, I'm an idiot. Like, why am I doing this? You know, clearly I think he, you know, that if I'm not here, he doesn't want me here when I'm a mess, or he doesn't want to tell me to be here when I'm a mess. Like, that's okay. Yeah. And we always feel like we have to tough it out. We got to do all this stuff. And it's just, you know, it's bullshit. So the last thing I was going to ask you, because we do have to wrap up, is do you have any particular like mental health anthems or any kind of music?
Oh, man.
What is that Alanis Morissette song? Is it Smile?
Oh, yeah.
There was an Alanis Morissette song that you clued me into that was great. My personal thing that I can judge it all by is the Garbage song, I'm Only Happy When It Rains.
Ooh, yes.
Shirley Manson. And it just captures, like, I can tell where I'm at mental health wise when I listen to that song in terms of what kind of response it evokes in my brain. Like, sometimes I'm just like right there with it in a very literal way. And sometimes I can, you know, I feel a great distance from what's being said in that song, but I highly recommend it. And that's also
that is a good one. I just Googled the Alanis song. It's called Smiling.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a newer one. It came out like a year or so ago, and the music, I would recommend the music video too, because it shows her like in a support group trying to like hold it all together, and it's just not working. And it's very on, very on brand for this conversation.
Yes. And I should say also, like when in talking about how the music, I can gauge myself by the music, being on antidepressants doesn't mean that we don't get depressed, that we don't get anxious, that we don't have those experiences. It doesn't make it go away. It doesn't make life go away. It just has this, you know, tweaking effect of the, for me, you know, I still get depression relapses, but, you know, I can know that it will pass as it always has. And I keep in close touch with my doctor when it's happening. And if it lasts more than a week or two, we really get into whether we need to do an adjustment. And just so you know, like also one final thing is that really, if you're suffering from this kind of anxiety or depression, like severe kind of, you know, the things we're talking about, and it's going on for 2 weeks or longer, that is a big sign you need to, that you should try and talk to somebody and check in on that. Because that's beyond just like being in a bad mood or having a sad day or whatever it is.
Yeah, there's a big difference between, you know, depressed and depression and being anxious and having anxiety. Like those
are
very different. And you're in a safe space here if you're listening, because you are not alone, clearly, because Lisa and I have been on this journey for a long time and we're happy that you're on this journey with us. And I guess, you know, Pete Davidson still kind of counts for the Music Minute because he is very rock and roll.
Oh, I love Pete Davidson so much. Did you see The King of Staten Island?
I've not watched it yet. Do I need to?
It's really good. I loved it. It's basically like his story, and it's a lot about what we're talking about. Like he, and I, actually we'll talk about it a little bit more in another podcast, but it's a good movie.
All right. I love it. Well, thank you so much for listening. And Lisa, thank you for,
for being
my Lexapro buddy.
Thank you for being mine. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. We hope you like what you heard. If so, please hit subscribe and consider rating and reviewing us so others can find us. Tawny, how can our listeners find you?
You can find me at Tawny M. Lara on all of the social medias. And you can find my blog, sobrietyparty.com. Lisa, how can we find you and your amazing book?
My book is Girl Walks Out of a Bar, and it is available at bookstores everywhere and online. And you can find me at lisasmithadvisory.com. And I'm on social media at Girl Walks Out. Thanks for listening.